All right. Common Sense Ohio. It is September 10th, 2025. The days are flying by. It's here we are in fall, third quarter. Lots to come today. Taxes suck. And why do taxes suck? Well, our sponsor, Harper Plus Accounting, is going to tell us why. But first, a message from our sponsor here.
Are you an entrepreneur who doesn't know when to pick up the phone or get out the keyboard to contact your CPA?
A lot of people are like that. And one of those things that you have to figure out when is the right time to do that is when you feel like you don't know what's going on. How much money am I making? How do I pay my taxes? I'm running my business out of my checkbook and I have no clue what's going on. I don't know if my employees are making me money. I don't know if my products are making money. I don't know which way I'm going. I'm upside down. I can't concentrate or can't think about anything other than where the heck am I, instead of thinking, how do I grow and continue on my business? That's when you should call.
So if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking to have a tax question in regards to that, drop it in the comments and we'll try to get back to you.
So there's our sponsor. And you happen to be at the table. So Glenn Harper here. We've got a special guest today, and that's why taxes suck. He's going to tell us all about it. You will note that Storm and Norman not at the table. I hope you're watching.
Yeah.
Had some obligations he had to attend to today. Couldn't make it here. But the show must go on, as it always does. If you've got a comment, we did get a great comment. I'm going to address that. Not today because we've got a guest, but we will address the comment we got. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks.
I think it's a great topic to cover, and I think it's worthy of a little bit of discussion. Mm-hmm. If you've got your own comment, leave it in the socials or go to commonsenseohioshow.com. That's commonsenseohioshow.com. Shoot us a question. That's what our fearless commenter, whatever. You get it. That's what he did. Mm-hmm. All right. So this day in history, September 10, 1813. Anybody got a guess?
1813 took a little trip. That's the wrong song, isn't it?
So last time you were pleasure boating up at the islands in Lake Erie and you were cruising around, you saw that big lighthouse that turns out to now be a monument for for Hazard Perry.
Oliver Hazard Perry.
Yeah, okay. Colonel Hazard Perry. Don't give up the ship. So on this date in 1813, we were waging war with the Brits. Again, some call it like the Second Revolution. Right. It was sort of a worthless war. The Brits... I guess all this started because the Brits were in war themselves, and they were taking our ships at sea and impressing our citizens into service on the British ships, and that turned out to be enough's enough. There was not a whole lot of support for the war, actually, at the beginning. So I know Madison, I believe, was, it wasn't a real popular war. You had the New Englanders, you had the Southern, people didn't care. You know, we were Americans, and what did we care if there was stuff going on in the high seas? But we did wage war with the Brits. I always say the Americans, our citizens, don't care about war until it's in their backyard. And then the Brits did something stupid, like burn down Washington, D.C. and the White House and such, and that was enough.
Poke the bear. The bear.
They poked the bear. It's like, same thing. It's like, now it's in my backyard, damn it. Mm-hmm. Now we got a problem.
Dust up my shotgun.
Now I've got a problem. And, you know, the Battle of New Orleans famously won after the war had been resolved. But anyway, in September, Perry... who came from a naval family, was patrolling around the Put-in-Bay up in Lake Erie and noticed—
Going to the bars?
He was going to check it out. He was going to go to the Beer Barrel, which I think is now on for sale, if I'm not mistaken. So if you want the Beer Barrel or whatever it is up, I think it's the longest bar in the world, so they say.
Okay. Yep.
That's for sale up in Put-in-Bay. I don't go there anymore. Yeah, sometimes. Anyway, he notices the British fleet near Rattlesnake Island, decides, I'm going to take them on directly. Loses his flagship, as it turns out, but jumps over to another ship, not before he grabs his flag that says, famously, don't give up the ship, defeats the Brits, takes a couple ships, a brig, and one schooner and one sloop, and after the battle, Perry dispatched to William Henry Harrison saying, we have met the enemy and they are ours. Two ships, two brigs, one schooner, and one sloop. There's a great museum up there at Put-in-Bay if you want to go check it out. But
going against the cannon fire.
Ohio makes it big again.
Yes.
And, you know, don't give up the ship. Everybody knows that now.
Mm-hmm. It's the rallying cry for everyone.
It's sort of like the show must go on even without Norm. Right.
Well, and it's funny you bring up the term flagship. I never really put that together. flagship. It's that flag that was on their
main ship. Ah, there you go. Yeah, so the flagship that carries the main flag.
And yeah, I never really put that together.
The colors. That's who we are. Yeah, who we represent.
It was disabled through cannon fire. He took him on frontally. You know, just say, you know, I don't care about you. And
I'm going in.
That is just a mindset of you have nothing to lose.
Or you,
you're
only
all
win.
In. You're all in, or you're. It's just done.
You know, it's like
that's guts.
These are guys. It's sort of like Patton, sort of like Sherman. It's like these are guys that are made for war.
Mm-hmm.
They're just made for
war.
They
see the end result already.
You sink this ship, I'm going to get on another ship.
Right.
And they realize.
Hold this flag.
But I think they realize something more. It's like this is. And remember, and to come up with that kind of thing, we have met the enemy and they are ours.
Exactly.
Like, is that a guy who's thinking, I'm going to create a little slogan for prosperity?
Pure triumphant glee.
It just is a guy who understands.
Yeah.
And I think what they understand is like Sherman, like plowing through the South and burning. It's like he understands we have to defeat the enemy and we have to do it sort of with a little bit of style and
right.
show everybody that, look, we're in charge here. We're doing this. And I think at that time we had lost. Look, we sort of won the 1812, but we didn't really. I mean, we lost most of the battles. I mean, it was not a very effective war for us, the United States of America,
well,
the young
country. We
didn't
have standing military, did we? We were still reserved.
Yeah, I mean, we were just, we were in danger of losing. And, you know, but this is one of those battles that basically helped end it in at least a stalemate, if not in our favor a tad bit. But, you know, it wasn't a real productive war for us. And this gave us a little bit of a battle cry. So
remember, back in the day, war was total domination of your enemy and total submission, and you take everything they've got.
Yeah,
it
the
wasn't
spoils.
This, well, let's negotiate. It's like, no, you come in, you want to play, we crush you.
Yeah, and there's battles like that in history and guys like that. And you know, it's a classic, we'll call it an American tradition, right? You know, this is, we are not going to give up the ship.
Once we start, you got us.
But now you
we don't
want
to get in. We really don't want to do this.
Well,
we
look, I mean, I've given this speech before. It's like, you know, we didn't really want to get involved in the Revolutionary War. Some people did, some people didn't. But next thing you know, they're blowing up our backyards and killing our kids.
Here we go.
Now we got a problem. We didn't want to get in 1812. You burned down the White House. Like, damn it.
Here we go.
Damn it. Right. It's like, you insulted my wife. Now we got to go.
Mess with the bull, you get the horns.
And then come World War I, we didn't really care. We didn't want much to do with it. And, you know, you sink a ship, and next thing you know, we're involved. And then World War II, it's like, you wonder how long we would have stayed out of World War II, but for the December 7th attack.
Yeah.
And
then
Hitler foolishly declaring war. It's like, we probably wouldn't have tinkered with that for a while. We didn't quite have it because we were isolationists. And
it's funny, most of the world-dominated people are always kind of like a little bit, like, I guess, whacked out. Americans, we've been pretty steadfast. Like, do we really have to do this? Okay, fine. We never really wanted to go conquer anybody. We just wanted to leave us alone.
And this is watch how I make this little segue. It's a good segue to modern times. Like, we have part of the Republican Party is real hawkish on foreign policy. The other part's like, look, we don't want anything to do with you. You go fight Ukraine, or you go fight the Russians on your own. You go do this on your own. We don't want to get involved. You know, there's still that attitude in our country that we don't want to get. It's not our mess, but I tend to disagree with that. I think it is our mess. I think if we are not filling the vacuum by we, and I think the point you made is we are not into world domination, despite what everybody thinks. I just disagree with you. Because if we were, we could have a long time ago.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, we could have a long time
just
ago.
Just being cognizant of what your neighbors are doing. I mean, you don't not pay attention to your neighbors.
Well, if we're not a show force in the world, then somebody else will be. And that's what I fear about China, et cetera. And we're going to segue into tariffs and taxes soon. But it's... I think that's an important consideration. It's sort of like if anybody's lived in a homeowners association, if the little lady on the corner wants to be the president, she probably shouldn't be. Right?
Correct.
So like whoever wants to be the president of the homeowners is probably not the one that should be the president.
De facto she is.
Right. Yeah. Right. You don't want her or him on the homeowners board if they really want that job because they're power hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to tell people what to do, and they somehow get off on that. But
it's America, you don't tell me what to do.
We just don't want to be told what to do.
Right.
That's why I was not a good fit for my latest homeowners association.
We're benevolent leaders. We are be there at the service of others to help the situation, but we really don't want to have to deal with it all.
All right. Well, with all that, we're gonna talk about taxes much, much more. So, Glenn, we got Glenn Harper here. If you haven't noticed yet, and you got to meet him in his on a little spot, but Harper Plus Accounting, my accountant, could be yours. So, first, tell us a little bit about your business, what you do, and we'll remind everybody where they need to go for real tax help.
Well, you know, accountants do two couple things. You know, everybody needs it for this thing called compliance, which is like, I got to file a tax return. I got to make a financial statement. And that's part of what accountants do. But the other part, what we love to do is the advisory side, which is the how, the why, the shortcut, the value add, the knowledge transfer. What do you do with your data? How do you get a better result, not just account for things? Because that's kind of boring. So we try to get the results. So if you have a small business and you're looking, you're like, man, I just know what this means. I'm just stuck here. I'm paying a lot of tax. What do I do? And your person isn't kind of giving you that advice. We're more than happy to help you. And if you have a more complicated tax return that has a lot of moving parts, I go married filing separate, Roth conversions, I got long-term capital gains, I got a K-1, maybe I have a rental property, you don't know how it all works, it's nice to have somebody that can help you with that versus just preparing your tax return.
Yeah, so like more business plan. It's funny how much taxes inform my business plan and what I'm doing.
We talk about that a lot down here.
All the time.
Off mic, of course, and just like, well, I'm going to do this because of this. Going to do this because of this.
Remember? Yeah. And taxes, as we know, they're really generated to generate revenue for the government, but the other thing they're doing is they're try to create policy. So they incentivize or de-incentivize taxpayers to do certain behaviors and either get rewarded by doing a certain behavior or they get punished by a certain behavior. So anytime you're in business, you're going to do something, you have to know, is this going to help me tax-wise or going to hurt me tax-wise? And that will generally help you make your decision on what that result is going to be.
Yeah.
What's amazing to me is what the federal government almost always, maybe this is too broad of a brush. I will say those who would simply conclude, tax the rich, take all their money and redistribute it somehow or another, they fail to account for the conversations like you and I have. Mm-hmm. We're humans. So now the government wants to take all my money. And not that I'm the rich they're taxing, but the point is we all want to avoid paying tax on some, like human nature is to try to avoid that. And not to commit crimes, not to commit fraud, not to do whatever, but we all protect our own houses. And, you know, we're not the filthy, highest billionaires, but even at my small business level, I operate in a human way to try to avoid paying more than I have to. And people think that that's somehow wrong. It's just, I don't know what the thought is, but my point, I guess what I'm trying to say is the tax code wants people to do certain things. And if you just put people in power and say, we're just going to tax everybody, they're going to do what they can to avoid it.
Remember, the first rule of thumb generally is that whoever you are, you always say, I pay too much tax. And somebody who makes more than you, that you always say they don't pay enough tax. That's the first rule. And then if you're taking a deduction or taking advantage of the tax code in a certain way that gives you an advantage, well, that's what I'm allowed to do. But if somebody else takes another deduction or something, well, that's a loophole.
It's got to be illegal.
It's an illegal loophole.
That's right. So
it's like Trump's debate with Hillary. Remember that? It's like, I did, and so did all your people.
Yeah. But again, so what it is that they broadly make, here's what the tax code is, IRS does what they do on it, and then it's up to you as a citizen and a taxpayer to try to navigate to say, well, if you'd want to pay more tax, go ahead and pay more. They'll let you pay more. You can just give them more, tell them to keep it and contribute if you want. But why would anybody want to overpay for something that you don't have to? And that's really what the tax code is about, is if you're competent and understand it a little bit, you can try to limit the amount that you would otherwise think you have to pay. But if you know all these rules and how the code works and what is allowed or allowable, you can keep reducing your tax liability legally because the code clearly says you can take these deductions.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's, again, somebody who gets let's say they get the earned income tax credit or they get the child tax credit. Well,
it's law.
Do you not want to take that? Right. I mean, you're getting the money. Do you not want to take it? Why is yours okay, but that one over there, depreciation is not okay for that guy or that gal, whatever. So it's really about just, they pitted the war against everybody, right? So if you're, you know, majority of the people in this country don't even pay any tax, right, at all, because they're under the limit where you even have to pay. And they're complaining that the rich or the other people above them don't pay enough. But I'm like, well, you're not even paying anything. So who gives you the right to say anything?
Right,
like you're getting
right.
all the services, but you're not paying anything. So it's a neat dynamic of what people think they pay and what they actually pay and what they think the other people pay.
And I like your the term competent and competent in knowing. I think the competency is also working with somebody that is smarter than you to figure this out and to explain it. Because, I mean, me going into my business, you know, initially as an LLC, and then all of a sudden you realize, whoa, the S-Corp stuff is huge. I need to modify how I do mm-hmm. things, all of a sudden I'm actually making more money. And I get to control that money then and do what I want to do with
you're
it.
You're one of those rich help. Guys. You're one of those
I know,
rich
exactly.
guys.
Right?
You
so
take advantage thinks of the tax code. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And I get to do what I want to do with it to help my community if I want or my family
right.
or spend it on my house. And then all of a sudden that money trickles out to the plumber, to the roofer.
Right, you're going
to repair.
You have an extra 20% of your income a year,
exactly.
so now you have now that becomes disposable income into the economy.
Right,
and look, there are people who are going to argue with this until they're blue in the they face, sure. but they don't have yeah. this perspective. And I think I've always said this. And I probably said it on the show a number of times. If everybody knew really how much they paid in tax, there would be a revolution.
Oh gosh, and that's beyond your income. It's every time you eat out.
That's right.
You,
yeah,
go fill your tank. I mean, read that sticker.
Yeah, it's insane.
Read that sticker on the gas pump, and it'll make you throw up in your mouth.
That's right.
if you really think about it.
At some point, ran the whole country without any tax, and all of a sudden, we can't run the country without massive tax. So I'm not sure what happened between 1917 or 1918 and today.
Yeah.
And prior to that, it's just very odd that we're in this situation. Mm-hmm. But I guess we— as a society, did mean that we need to provide more services and things for the people, the parks, the military. So we have to get the money somewhere. So I guess they must have said it's okay to do this.
And I think on the small business side, this is just my own bias, I think it manifests itself probably more so than any other area. So like if there's huge, like a percentage to us running a small business can mean a good year or a bad year. It can mm-hmm. it can mean like mm-hmm. you get to have a family trip this year or not. So and it's if you tweak one thing or another, it really has a huge impact on us. Mm-hmm. Now I think you get the Walmarts; they can sort of absorb some of this and more than the guy on the mom and pop on the corner.
Well, I think to that point is the code is the code, and if you make if you have a certain income level, what it costs you to invest into leverage yourself to legally avoid the taxes and do all the things you're supposed to do that are available, it costs X amount of dollars. Well, if it only saves you this much dollars, this is significant, but this is a big number.
Yep.
So you have to get to the point where the savings outweigh the costs, and that's just a certain a point for everybody. Like, it just mm-hmm. depends on your circumstances. But like, if you once you start making, you know, $10 million a year, you can afford to pay somebody millions of dollars a year to avoid millions of dollars in taxes. Mm-hmm. That's just part of the game. If you're billion, these massive companies that don't pay any tax anywhere, I mean, they have an army, like literally thousands of CPAs, accountants, attorneys, outside counsel, lobbyists, to make sure they don't even have to pay tax. So
well,
like, we don't have that as average person.
Let's unpack that a little bit. So the big when you say they don't pay any tax, let's sort of take the top, like the corporation doesn't pay any tax. How's that trickle down, and what kind of taxes are coming out of the company altogether?
Well, I mean, just like, you know, I think it's Nike, maybe, don't quote me on that, but their headquarters in Ireland. So they do the royalties back and forth. And so their, quote, taxable income in the U.S. is next to nothing. And then they take all the money and shift it to Ireland, which is a very, very nominal tax. And as long as they leave the money over there, they don't pay tax here. So they just bring enough over to cover their operations, and they don't pay any income tax. And I'm not picking on Nike.
Well, no, but look,
all big companies
do it. Is there anything illegal doing that?
Nothing illegal at all.
So here's the problem. Now you got this guy named Zoran Mondami who's going to say, we're going to start taking all this tax. Everybody's going to pay their, quote, fair share. There's a reason Nike went to Ireland. Mm-hmm. And is there anything in the tax code that would prevent the next company from doing the same thing?
They all go do that. That's the thing. And so when the TCJ with Trump in his first term, he lowered that top tax bracket from, like, I think 35% corporate down to, say, 22 or 21. I keep remembering the rates, but they keep changing. But they lowered that corporate rate on the hopes that, hey, maybe now it's like, let's leave the money here and do things here. And so it did bring a lot of money back. And so now that tax rate's permanent, so it's very low. So we're hopeful these companies will start putting their profits back in here. But still, if you're going to pay 3% there and 21% here, where would you rather be?
Now, there's a border wall, but it doesn't keep us in.
No, it does not. It's supposed to keep something out.
Right. It doesn't keep us in.
Jurassic Park, right?
And this is what I always say to people. It's like, look, you can say we're going to raise the corporate tax rate. We're going to make them pay. We're going to make them pay the fair. We're going to do whatever. And then people leave. Now, Trump's got another plan, apparently, called tariffs. How's that fit into the equation?
Again, this is one of those
complicated— I get it. This is a different—
Right. It's just the most bizarre thing that this country, USA, ran on tariffs exclusively, pretty much, until we put in the income tax in 1917 it was. And so we ran the country for 150 years without income tax. And all of a sudden, here they are, and then they spiked up real high. So now I'm not sure how and who, what pays these tariffs, right? It's just the strangest thing. But like, as a consumer, this money's being collected from somebody, whether it's the other company or however, and it's allegedly going to pay the deficit or going in the coffers. I've yet to see the paper trail of that, but allegedly it's supposed to work.
It's been said out loud. Yeah, exactly.
It's worked for 140 years. Like, why wouldn't it work now? So eventually they're saying, well, I want to make a point. So when you raise the tax on a corporation, they're in the business of making profit and return for their shareholders. That's their sole purpose, right? And to keep customers, get a product, get you hooked to it, make you buy it. And then they want to generate a rate of return to pay that rate of return back to their shareholders, whether it's dividends or gains, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Well, if you raise the tax, and that's just another cost of doing business for the company, well, they're just going to raise the prices or they're going to cut expenses. And when you do that, who ultimately is going to pay that? The end user who buys that product or service is going to probably pay more. Or there's going to be less people working in that company that are making money and paying tax because now they're unemployed because they had to cut some costs. So, you know, tax rates always generate an immediate tax surplus and then the revenue goes down.
Yeah.
Tax cuts always, the rate, the amount of revenue kind of decreases, then exponentially goes up when they do a tax decrease because more commerce is happening.
And it takes a few years.
Right. It takes a while to build an economy. And then everybody's spending more money because we're hiring people. It takes a while to bring that change in. And with the tariffs that they're going to make the people build to avoid a tariff, you build your factory here. I mean, you can't build a factory. Anybody's just remodeling a bathroom. It takes you months. How are you going to build
that's a 2 or 3 year
$2 billion factory. Yeah. It takes years and then you get it integrated. So the hard part with this policy is that unless the Congress gets involved and the next administration continues that policy, all this money is being poured into this infrastructure to build new factories and all these things. But if those policies don't continue, why they're just going to abandon that project.
Be shuttered up. And
so here we're back to square one. So again, you have to have a policy. You know, if you're a business owner, you guys are business owners, I'm a business owner, we need to predictability of what the tax code is going to look like so we can predict what that number is so we know where to put the resources for everything else. People think that if they're not a business owner, they just think companies have gajillions of dollars and they just make all this money, they got all these write-offs. It doesn't work like that.
Well,
some companies do. But
COVID showed that too. Look how many businesses went under mm-hmm. very quickly when they had to shut down. They couldn't survive 3 months.
So these people
they're not that they got a Fort Knox full of money that they can go pull from. A lot of businesses run pretty lean.
I had a group
maybe
down
by
here.
Design. I don't know, but they do.
The point is it's a job. Yeah. It's exactly. for the mom and pop shop, for us really. It's mm-hmm. this is my job. Running the business is my job. And mm-hmm. when the business goes away, I lose my job. So, and that the ramifications aren't huge. Like, I'm not causing huge tidal waves in the market, but that means the people that work for me are going to lose their job too. And, you know, again, it's not like Walmart losing thousands, but, you know, it has its ripple effect. And I had guys down here debating the COVID strategies at one point, and they were basically Zoran Mondami-esque people. You know, that was the ideology they ascribed to. And, you know, it was in the heart of COVID. And they were talking about how this was great and we're going to have all this government, but whatever. And I just said, well, look, I had to lay off my employees or I had to do this because of COVID or whatever. And then I brought them back. And they're like, well, maybe, and what they were getting at, and I finished it, like, maybe you should take less money. And I said, well, look, I haven't had a paycheck in a year. And they just looked at me. And I said, no, really, I haven't had a paycheck in a year because I kept my employees on. And as long as I could. And they worked for a government entity, a department. I'm not going to say which one, but they worked for a government department. There was zero impact on them whatsoever. Zero. I said, you've had a paycheck for the last whatever. How much have you had to work? He had to work hardly. He was getting a paycheck and he wasn't working. I said, it's the opposite for me. I'm working my nuts off and I'm not getting a paycheck. So don't tell me that your version works. And they, people just don't have this perspective.
Right. And they didn't get to hear that perspective very often.
No.
People didn't talk
about
it.
It was not on the news.
So they're just ignorant of the facts of what was going on.
Of what was going on. And mom and pop grocery store, they can't absorb this kind of, this business shutdown. Walmart could, and Walmart didn't have to shut down. It was just.
Right. It's lunacy.
Whenever the government puts its thumb on the proverbial scale, things get so out of whack. And I guess what would you say to those Mondamiites, I'll call them, who would say, well, look, if they're going to leave, we'll stop them from leaving. Or they have to pay them. So like, there's always a government regulation they will have, and there's always another move the other side makes.
Well, it's a tough one, right? Because the companies have already been leaving the proverbial blue states because of the regulation. And a lot of companies don't want to do business there because it's so hard. There's so much, you can't get anything done. Mm-hmm. So they're going to the red states to try to get things done. Well, but blue states and some of those areas, it's really nice. I mean, there's a lot of history.
Well, California, New York, I mean, these are great places.
Yeah. New York City, that's the mecca of everything, right? But if you don't have where you have, it's safe, you have good government policies, you have regular tax things, you have an opportunity for profit, you're protected in what you're trying to do, you got good customers, you're not getting hassled, you'll do business there because there's always a market for that. But when you disincentivize somebody or make it too hard and take too much of that entrepreneur's profit for whatever that fee, registration, tax, penalty for not doing something or unreasonable request, they're just like, I'm out of here. Okay, now that you can take your intellectual property and go, you can take your equipment and go, but you really can't take your building, you really can't take the big thing. So I don't know the end game, because if everybody in New York leaves, the business owners and all the wealthy people don't make that their resident where they live, and that revenue stream shuts off, well, who gets those buildings? Like, if you own a building and you just walk away, well, the government just takes it over, and who owns it? Like, so what's your end game? You just walk away.
Well, that is his end game.
Yeah, you leave and you don't, who's going to run it, and you lose that investment? That doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, well, I think that is his end game. Is like, right. His stated purpose is a government takeover of private property.
But again, and as I think just a normal person, like, I'm trying to understand why you would want to overregulate the people and the businesses that employ your constituents, who then pay your taxes and do the whole cycle. Why would you want to make that even harder when it's already so hard? Mm-hmm. Where's the incentive, or where's the path to make it so, hey, can we just get along and make this thing work? It's odd to me.
It is odd.
Yeah. It almost has the ring of, we have to do something.
Well, it's
because of some situation, and this is a knee-jerk reaction to, or he just knows he's got the
look. I think
that's
he's
a great idea.
I think he's an ignorant socialist.
We are smarter than everybody.
I mean, I'll say it right now. He just doesn't understand the big picture.
I just don't know.
I mean, he's done nothing. He's never. He's like, he doesn't understand this. Like, it's like every other utopian socialist communist ideal out there. It never works, for the reasons we're talking about. And sooner or later, maybe New York just has to experience it.
I don't know. I just feel bad for the people that don't want that and are living there, and that's their home, and they want to, that's their history.
They get to vote.
Right? But if there's not enough of them, and now they're being squashed by whoever else, like, it's just, they're basically going to just take their things. And that's just the sad place to be in the country, where you don't have a voice, and what you work so hard for, somebody, the government, can basically take it from you. And that was the whole reason of the American Revolution, I think.
Yeah.
It's like,
well,
you
describe a situation where that can happen in red states too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
We haven't seen it quite yet, but it can turn. They get a little power hungry.
Power always corrupts.
And then all of a sudden, they're just pushing stuff through. We're kind of seeing tinklings of this here in Ohio. Just kind of weird legislation going on by the red, and it's like, what is this?
Well, think about that, right? Most businesses that, say, operate in Ohio, we have to operate under the same rules as all the other businesses. Mm-hmm. So if you are, a 100-person company and your sales are, 50 million, you have the same rules as a $5 million company with 50 employees. And then if you get, you're a $1 million company with 5 employees, you got to do the same paperwork. You got to do the same thing. There's different nuances, of course. We all know that. But but in general, you're under the same rules. Mm-hmm. And if you have a lot of money or profit, you can afford to navigate that and have whole departments for it. But if you're just a one or two owner shop or three or four employees, it's impossible to navigate that. Yeah.
Well, this is where you come in, right?
That's the regulation. Yeah. Then we have the tax. That's the same thing. So it's even harder for that size company to recognize that if they spend a little bit of money for that advice, they're going to get a great return for that. But that fear of, I got to spend this, because they don't even know what the savings is.
Until you've gone through it one cycle a year. I mean, quite frankly, that's exactly what happened with me working with you as well, too. Because that was a step up for me to work with you.
It's a big investment.
It's a big investment, but it's always paid off. And again, yes, applaud to you, but I think in the big picture, what you just talked about, it's worth looking at. Whoever you're working with, whoever
it is. Find somebody, right.
Find somebody. But it's that big jump that you think you're jumping over a canyon, but it's just a crack in the sidewalk.
It's like the decision to hire an employee.
Just do it. But you got to be involved. You got to be involved with that whole scenario.
It's like people say, I can't afford, and I say, you can't afford not to do it.
You can't afford not to. Yeah. Yes, I agree.
It is amazing how, and again, we're not talking, we're going deep, deep in the code and putting some gray area in there and making we don't have to go down there. We just take the basic things that most people aren't doing. Mm-hmm. And I do what I do is because that's my client who I want to help, that that makes a tremendous impact for them. I mean, it'd be great to help a multi-billion dollar national company save a few hundred million, but you know, I don't really get to see the look in somebody's face when they say, oh my gosh, those savings, I can afford the new car. I can put my kid in college. We can get a bigger house.
Or here's 20 grand for your retirement, right?
Whatever. We can go to make groceries this week. Oh my gosh, I don't have to lay off this employee. Those changes are so impactful. And for me, that's why I love doing what I do, because at a macro level, it makes life easier and more affordable and lets you get to the next level. And that's way more impactful than, you know, for a multi-billion dollar.
Well, company. And even to your point of saying, when you hear that, and I'm sure it's not, and if it's when, it's like, I don't have to lay them off. That has got to, you got to be going,
it's
home
awesome.
And smiling.
It's a high five.
You got to save it. That's huge.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
That's a huge thing.
And in 30 years doing this, I've noticed, I've sort of seen, I started as just a guy with a shingle out. Mm-hmm. So I get money and I was like, all right, well, that's whatever, you know, and you're paying about half of that immediately. Like you have estimates and all this other stuff. But I found a long time ago that I can effectively manage my business. And I'm a service business, right? I'm an attorney. I have another job. But one full-time job is managing the business, and the other full-time job is being a lawyer.
Correct.
And you have to do both. And if you try to do both at the same time, like anything else, something suffers. It might be the overall, like I don't have time to do this over here, so therefore I can take on less clients. Because I have to do this over here. And at some point, I think what you're saying, Brent, is like you get to the point where you've got to get help over here. Mm-hmm. And until you do that, you're going to be held back by the chains of running the business instead of doing what you do, which is go earn a living.
Yeah. And remember, you can ChatGPT and TaxGPT, and you can go search for all the what you think the answers are. But ultimately, you're going to interpret that. You're going to fill out your tax return and sign it. And then you're like, did I do that right?
Mm-hmm. There's always question.
Did I put all the dots together? Because AI is great, but it doesn't put it all together the way that somebody who knows the whole picture. It'll get there someday. Agentic AI will get there, but right for now, it can give you options that should work, but until you know all these certain circumstances, that one won't work. This one will work if you pair it with this other one, and this one, you know, that's the one you want, but we got to adjust this here. That's the part that's hard to know, and that's what the big, beautiful bill that just passed. I mean, it made a lot of things permanent, and tax cuts always sound great on TV. We're going to get a tax cut. It's no tax on tips. Right? Well, it's in the fine print. Well, what does that mean? Well, if you make over a certain amount, you don't get it. Right. If in this particular industry, you might not get it. They added the FICA tip credit. It used to be just for businesses that were in the food service. For the tips, you get a credit back as an owner. Well, now they adjusted that to personal services like spas and massage parlors and things like that.
Law firms.
Right. You don't get that. You don't get that. So I would love to get the tip credit.
We had worked that out completely.
Because I'd pay everybody with tips.
We did. We
right?
said it on the show. I was like, how does that work? You know, I think it was an episode. It's like, how does
yeah,
that work
I was
going to
start.
Oh, my God.
I was going to start charging less fees but encourage tips.
Tips. Here's my tip jar. Not more than $10,000 a tip. But, no, it's funny how that what you think is happening, what's not, is happening. But at the end of the day, the goal, you know, with as an entrepreneur is like you don't want to work so much and you feel like you have to work so much that by the time you pay the tax, you'll pay all your overhead, you're left with X. Is that enough to live on? Because mm-hmm. as you know, everybody somehow manages to live on whatever they make. It's the damnedest thing.
Mm-hmm. It is a truism.
You can make minimum wage and you'll still, everybody's going to eat. You're going to have a place to sleep. You can make $1 million a year. You're still going to eat and have a place to sleep. So somewhere in between there, when your lifestyle starts creeping up and you have to work more, it would be nice to say, well, where can I save that on? And it could be implementing the big, beautiful bill and how to leverage that. It could be how to cut spending and how to reduce lifestyle costs. Because at the end of the day, I don't think we're here to work 24/7. I mean, I enjoy what I do. You enjoy what you do. You enjoy what you do. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to do 24/7 just to make the ends meet. I want to work 13 jobs. So if you can be smarter with what you do, and I think the big, beautiful bill really helps the average person, probably the lesser earner. The standard deductions went higher, so Social Security isn't taxed as much, and people can make a lot more money without being taxed, same in Ohio. So you're at a certain level, you don't even pay tax, and then it really rewards the small business owner. If you're an entrepreneur, you really get to participate fully. And I don't know about my clients, when they get a tax cut, they don't just take it and go on vacation to Hawaii and be a fat cat. They always invest back in their business. They always improve their house. They go hiring people. They always put that money to work for them because that's just their mindset. And then they think, well, I can get bigger and better and make more profits. So from a tax standpoint, if you can leverage that to help you improve your lot in life, why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah. And I think you make a good point that needs to be reinforced that, you know, our economy is driven by small business.
It really is.
And it's sad. You know, I know the term entrepreneur is really the catchphrase and it has caught on for a long time, but I think it's just replaced the small business owner name to a certain degree. There's a mindset behind entrepreneur, but that's the same kind of mindset behind small business if you think about it. I mean, whether you're a brick or mortar or you're just flying with a laptop on your lap at a coffee shop, you're still a small business owner and an entrepreneur. So I think those two need to be put together.
I think the term we'd call them solopreneurs.
Yeah. Like
somebody who's their only owner, only employee. They have basically they built themselves a job and they're in charge of that and they're in charge of destiny. And they may hire some sub out some people, but they're not they don't really want to scale and grow their business. They want to just operate, do what they love, but don't really want to run a business around it, but they just want to do what they want to do and kind of have a control over that. And then the entrepreneur is the person that's saying, say, I'm trying to hire more people to work and I want to grow a business that can probably survive if I'm not working in it. Mm. But it's a really hard jump from a solopreneur to, you know, doing business to building a business. And
that's
it's really hard to do. And you really have to kind of have a screw loose to want to put that much effort in and that much risk and that much sacrifice to get to that next level. But the entrepreneurs, they're just programmed differently, right? And if you have a tax environment, you have a policy environment that promotes that, then that lets people flex and do the thing that they didn't even know they could do, that they were really good at. And who knew that, you know, you're going to do what you want to do, here you are nailing it.
Exactly.
Here you are nailing it.
Yeah.
You could have went and got a job somewhere. And there's nothing wrong with taking a job.
It's just a different mindset.
That's what you want to do.
And you're saying that atmosphere is getting better or it's always been really good and it's just continually getting better.
The big, beautiful bill kind of locked in the uncertainty of how the qualified business deduction and how those things work. And we know the framework now, what it means to operate a business in the U.S. for the federal code and what it means to operate in Ohio and in the cities of Ohio. What does that mean? Okay, we can put a finger on that. Okay, that's what that is. Now we can project and build this out here, our operations and our profitability, our deductions and all our behavior to understand that and get the best result. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the business side of it, whereas the entrepreneurial side, like you said, I can't make you a better attorney. You're going to be either a good attorney or not, but I can help you be a better business owner that has an attorney shop. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how to do podcasting. God knows I'm trying to do it myself, right? But I can, the business aspect with that, we can help. And so when we understand those rules and they're set, it makes it a lot easier mm-hmm. to do that. And that's really what everybody really wants to do. Because again, most people don't like tax. I don't know why I love tax. I'm kidding. again, I always say, like, if they were to come out tomorrow and get rid of the tax code, you know, Trump has said that, like, let's just get rid of the income tax and do all tariffs. I would probably be the biggest fan and say, I'll go find something else to do because I don't think it's fair that somebody has to.
It's never going to happen. I will go on record right here at the round table. It's never going to happen.
But if it did, I'll find another job. I'll figure something else to do because, again, it just seems like that's such a hard thing for people to do. If they can make it easier, that would be awesome. I'd be a big mm-hmm. fan of it, which is odd because that's my livelihood here to help people do that. But, again, I think that's something that's probably best for the country. Mm-hmm. Like, Dubai doesn't have an income tax. Like, what do you, you know?
Well, let me ask you a question. Like, how do they operate? Your clientele seems to be sort of small to medium, even larger businesses. Mm-hmm. Getting back to the tariffs, have you seen, I guess, do you have any guys in retail? Do you have any guys that have been impacted by any of this yet?
Nothing. Like, it's crickets. Everybody's like, these tariffs, and they're collecting hundreds of billions of dollars. Anybody know where it's going? No. Does it affect anything? Are you paying more or less? No, everything's the same. Well, I don't know what that means. I'm still waiting to see where it's.
Now, I went to buy coffee the other day at Walmart, and I was shocked by the cost. You know, I'm used to spending 10 or 12, and it was 18 or 20. Yeah. Okay, so I imagine that's a tariff.
Yeah, and we got to get rid of that coffee tariff. I mean, we don't grow coffee in the United States.
We can't grow coffee. Or maybe
Hawaii
we'll start
is the only
it.
State. It's the only state. I think we'll get that off the list.
I need a
that's
greenhouse.
That's selfish.
I need a greenhouse. I need to
some volcano ash so I can get
I need to start growing coffee.
Exactly. You know, it's funny that you say that your clients have not been affected by that because my daughter works for a marketing agency in Colorado, and they have already shut down some perks for their employees because they're afraid that their clients are going to be affected by the tariffs.
Well, that's the uncertainty. That's
preemptive, but
that's a preemptive uncertainty.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's what I mean.
But they're planning for the worst and hoping for the best.
Yeah.
But they're trying to preserve capital.
Usually those perks don't come back. Well, so I kind of wonder if a lot of that's in disguise of they are on the chopping block anyway. We're just going to use the tariff excuse to get rid of it.
There's so much flux right now. So if you're running a business – and if we've deported now how many people and then we've deterred how many people from coming in, mm-hmm. that's got to impact the labor force at some point.
Oh, yeah,
and that's going to create scarcity in labor, and that's going to drive up wages on some level, which mm-hmm. is also going to drive up prices because like you pointed out, it's like none of this is in a vacuum. You can't just say, we're going to force you to pay your workers more. Well, you can do that, but then we're going to have to charge everybody else more for what we do. And because, look, I can't afford to do it, and that's just how it is. Mm-hmm. So you wonder, there's like so many moving parts that are in flux right now. It's like we've got a labor force out there that's questionable. We've got tariffs out there that's questionable. We've got now the Supreme Court is perhaps going to strike down the tariff, and I think they will. So you've got all this.
It's the craziest thing. In the purest sense, we as Americans, like we're going to play football. I'm going to work hard. You're going to work hard. We have a set of rules. We're going to go against each other. May the best person win, whatever that looks like. If we're business owners and you're doing the same business I am, I'm competing against you, but we have the same rules. Either you're going to be better at marketing. Mm-hmm. Maybe I have a better manufacturing process, but we have the same rules and we're going to compete in the field of the arena of this under these set of rules. Well, it's really hard if I and you and I are both preparing this little coaster here. And we have all these rules of how we have to do it, and we got to sell that thing for $20 to hit our number. Well, a country overseas is building that and shortcutting or whatever they do, and they don't have the rules and regulations, and they dump that in their market and they sell it for $5. That's not equal competition. That's hard. So now here I'm sitting here going, okay, as a consumer, I'm going to pay 20 or 5. I'm probably going to pay the 5. Well, now this company's out of business. So the tariffs allegedly are supposed to make that $5 thing go on the shelf at $20.
Yeah.
So now as a consumer, I have a choice to pay the same product, allegedly made somewhere else or here, and they both cost $20. So the ability to make it so it's an equal playing field on the retail side of it, what I pay for it, helps the U.S.-based business have a competitive not, I wouldn't say it's an advantage. It just makes the playing field equal mm-hmm. because we have a different set of rules.
Yeah.
Now, if those folks have to play by the same rules wherever they're out of.
Well, then that happens naturally.
Then we're going to have the same product. And now we're going to compete on the quality. We're going to compete on the marketing, the brand mm-hmm. recognition, and all efficiencies. That's how one would, in a perfect world, that's how it's right. supposed to work. It can't be that person is dumping crap in the ocean, forced labor, you know, stealing our patents, or wherever that is in the world. Like, I'm not picking on this particular country, but right. it just happens. And we might do the same thing. I don't know. But, like, it's just not right. And we are trying to, when you walk into Walmart, we want the, if you buy the U.S.-made channel lock or the Husky, it's the same product. Quality is a little bit different, obviously, but it's that the price is so bare. If I just need a pair of, you know, side cutters one time, I'm going to buy the cheap one.
Yep. Okay,
right.
Yep.
Which I love choices, mm-hmm. but like.
Well, look, Americans love this. Like, we are spoiled with a. With
throwaway society, yeah.
With a market that is wide open. And we've lived this now for 30 or 40 years where we can have cheap China made stuff, or not just China, but overseas anywhere. Made stuff right. with a labor force that is not hindered by the same regulatory scheme that we have here in the United States.
I remember, I was talking about that made in, you know, turning things around yep. made in China. I remember, I grew up in the 70s, basically born in the 60s, grew up in the 70s. I remember seeing that made in China and thinking, that's kind of cool. Because yeah. everything was made in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh, this came from China.
Made in Taiwan, remember wow. the
thing? Oh yeah, made in Taiwan, not realizing, well, oh God, that's a hurricane coming. Like,
the made in Japan was sort of a stigma for a while. You know, if you had a guitar that was made in Japan and not made in the United States, you'd be like, oh, this is a Japanese Strat. It's not the same. Now they're desired.
Exactly, right? Exactly. You
know, or the automotive, like now it's desired, so.
Right, and it's just funny how, like you said, that 30, 40, 50 years, how it's, That wave has just changed.
Yeah. I firmly believe that the American ingenuity, the mindset of Americans is like we're just, I don't want to say we're never satisfied, but we're always striving for something bigger
and better, stronger.
And mm-hmm. it's just, that's the only way you as a settler came here. That's the only way you could survive. And it's just in our DNA. That's how we roll. And if you were given if we take the restraints off and we can fight fair, we will probably be able to hold our own in the marketplace. But yeah. right now, we are like got a hand behind our back. We got a shack on our foot. You know, we're not allowed to do certain things. It's just not fair. And the government should be protecting us, its citizens, to be able to compete not only in our own country but worldwide to make sure that we have the rights. We have the same opportunities and rules as everybody else. And I think that's an okay thing to do.
But there's a bigger point to be made on what you just said. It's not just that we are Americans and we want to go fight. We want to do that. I think as humans, we need that. Like, we need to deal with the problems ourselves in order to have some sort of human life enjoyment. I mean, right. it's such an odd paradox that we feel the best after going through the worst. You know, yet it's true
thing.
In my life. Anyway, it's been true when it's soft and easy, I tend to get fat and bored. When it's hard and I've got to scrap and struggle and go through all the turmoil to get to where you are, there's no more satisfying component of life than when you're in the midst of that and you see the end and you conquer it. And then you decide, I'm going to put something else in front of me and conquer that too. And I think what we're missing right now with all this sort of soft stuff going on is that mindset. And it is an American, maybe it's an American, I think it's a human mindset, or at least a Western human mindset. Like, we need to struggle, and on the other end of struggle is growth and prosperity.
Right, the easy button, you know, when you're having a bad day, it's nice to have the easy button and DoorDash just shows up, right? But at the end of the day, if you got to go out and you got to plant your field, you got to go raise your animals, and you got to go butcher, you got to go harvest, and then you go and you do the thing. It is a much more rewarding thing. We just don't have the time because we're spending the time going working so hard to pay half of it to tax and go all the regulations and drive and do the commute and do all the things that we've not got back to those things we love to really do to that point.
Well, but I don't think
what is that tax-free day now? On the calendar, remember you used to have it on the day on the calendar that you had to work all the way through like May or June before you.
Yeah, I remember.
I don't know what it is anymore. Yeah, I've not heard him talk about that
anymore. It's got to be, depending on your bracket, by the time you add up everything, it's got to be somewhere in July, August. Oh, I mean, and it's just, that's embarrassing. As a country, like as its citizens, you got to be like, really? We have to work this hard to provide to somebody else, this nameless organization that's going to take our money. And then
filter it through the most inefficient department of whatever you can possibly have, and then give it away.
80% of it is getting siphoned off to somebody who's really, really smart, knows how the government works, and puts it in their own PAC or their own non-for-profit or NGO, whatever. And a little bit flows down to the people supposed to intend to. That just doesn't seem fair.
Right. Well, it's lunacy.
Because I'm not smart enough to be one of those people, and nor would I want to, because I don't want to legally steal from the U.S. because I know how the system works and I can get a tax or a fee buried into a budget with a lobbyist, so I get paid on the backs of American workers. No, I want to pay me for my services. And I don't want it for free.
There's nothing more barren than that number you see when you run a small business, when you have like somebody like you. I had two advisors. One was an old school legal secretary, and the other is you. And ironically, the old school legal secretary gave me this for free. Now I have to pay.
It's the damnedest thing.
But you know what she said?
She said, negotiations going on right
now. If you make a dollar, you take 40 cents of that dollar and you stick it in a savings account and don't look at it until you have to pay your taxes. And if everybody just followed this advice, then when they get to you, you could pay your tax. But it does two things. One, you never get behind your taxes. The second thing it does is it exposes how much you're really paying.
Right.
So if somebody pays me $500 or $1,000 and I only get $600, or really even $500 if you start adding up some of the fees and the regulatory stuff, it's like 50 cents of everything I make, I don't get to keep. So when I get a legal fee for whatever it is, say it's a $5,000 legal fee to do something, or if you're HVAC guy, and so you get a new furnace and it costs $7,500. Like half of that is going to pay the government and it's gone.
Right.
So when people run a small business, that becomes so obvious and apparent.
That's the first thing I told my daughter when she started to do stuff on her own as a side gig. Put half of it away.
I always use half as a number because it's
just do it.
Unless you're in California,
this is going back 30 years.
You're probably not going to get over half.
And it's still your money if you put it at half. It's in an account somewhere. It's not gone.
You know, the number one reason that most businesses fail is they don't properly pay and classify their employees correctly. Mm. They call them subcontractors when they're really employees.
The shoe always drops on
and that goes and follows you to your grave, and you can never get rid of that. And that's a really bad thing that can happen. The second thing is you make $100,000. You're told to put away $50,000 for tax. You didn't. So you show up in my office on April 10th and we're like, okay, if here's your taxes. I need $50,000 for last year. I need $12,500 for your Q1 estimate. And they're like, what? And I'm like, well, I told you to put the money away. Well, I didn't think you were serious. I don't joke about taxes. And they're like, and they're done. And unless your business keeps going, it'll take you 5 to 7 years to recover from that snafu.
Well, and the other part is the human nature part, because once you learn to live on less, it just changes what the benchmark is. And that means, so if I'm only getting 50 cents on the dollar, I've learned how to live on 50 cents on the dollar. And that scales up my whole career. That is scaled up. So I've never overspent in my personal life because I know that money in that account, while it's enticing, while it looks good, all it is to me is fuel to get more pissed off at the government because they're going to get it all come April. Yeah. And it's maddening, but I've adjusted my lifestyle to fit that. And if you don't start that way, it's really difficult to go back.
Well, that's where we, as you know, most accountants didn't make it in engineering school, so they flunked out of engineers and became accountants. That's a standing joke.
Is that the standing joke?
It's a funny thing. Of course, I start off in accounting because I thought that would be the way to go. But we have to reverse engineer it. So if you want to make $100,000 in profit, and you want to take home $100,000, you got to make $200,000 because the government's taking half.
Well, plus your expenses.
Right. Well, this is our profit. So if you want to take home $100,000, you really got to take home $200,000. You got to make $200,000 profit. Well, now we know what your expenses are, overhead. Well, now we know what your sales, you thought you had to sell $200,000. I'm making up a number, say $200,000 a month. Well, now based on everything, you got to sell $350,000 a month to net your $200,000 so you can walk home with $100,000. That click, 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 if a new client comes to my office and we're getting to start a business, they have to redo their whole model because they didn't think about the tax consequence. They thought when you make 100, you get 100. I'm like, no.
Well, you know, when you stated that to me, in my mind going, that's bullshit.
that's crazy bullshit. Dog.
There's no way. And it's like, oh, yeah, it's true. Because it hits you hard. Going, there's no way that's right. What voodoo is he preaching
now,
here?
But it's
true.
Compound it to the scenario that you've pitched here a minute ago, which is you get behind. Now you owe 50 or 60 or 100,000 in debt. You've got to make 200,000 to pay back that debt. Like, you're not paying that with pre-tax
dollars. And then you don't have money to live on. So if your business doesn't grow by double.
This is why I tell people avoid the debt until you know it's the right thing. But people that live on that sort of, like, you can never get out of that because you're spending.
It's horrible.
If I owe 50, I got to make 100 to pay that off clean. So when you go get the car, you get now you're paying it off with after-tax dollars. You got to deal with
that. And what you just said is so important because if you think that you have 100, but you only have 50, you're going to spend like you have 100.
That's right.
So you're going to encumber yourself. I'm going to buy that house.
Which is why, the old school secretary said, put that money over there, Sonny. Don't you touch it. Don't you touch it.
And it's never not worked, has it?
It's never not worked.
Yeah. And you get a habit of it. It just sits there, and you know, you don't even see it anymore.
And when
you
people
just don't, yeah.
And when young lawyers or people come to me and they say, I'm going to start a business and they want my help, or they're asking my, believe it or not, people ask me this question. They should be asking you. Yeah. But I always ask this question, how long can you live without a paycheck?
What?
And they look at me like, what? I was like, dude, you're not getting paid for, you know, you're going to live on peanuts. You're going to live on, like, you need to find your base bare minimum. That's just enough to keep a roof on your head and wheels below you to get to work. And that's it.
Yeah. And that's where we go back to this big, beautiful bill. All the provisions in the prior TCJA, Trump, the Tax Cut Act, everything was set to expire at the end of this.
Which would have been disastrous.
Well, what has happened is all our clients, our business owners are like, depending on what the election does, that could either mean we're going to try to extend it or it's going to expire. And everybody's tax as a business owner, we'd have lost the QBID, the income tax rate went up. All these provisions that when they were set to expire, it was a very anxious time.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
Because those decisions that you had to make as a business owner, like if you were betting that Trump wasn't going to win, you were making those decisions probably back in February, March of last year to cut head count and change how you're going to do things, recalibrate how you're going to do things, what you were going to buy, what that looked like. If you were betting on Trump to win, you were like, I'm going to hold steady through the election to see. Mm-hmm. But even then, they were still nervous until the big, beautiful bill passed because we didn't know. And then Trump did a cool thing. He went back and retroacted some things back to January 20th.
To let people undo it.
To ensure that we could still do this thing, which was really nice because now everybody can go, whew, okay, status quo with a couple more perks. And now everybody can, like, business is normal. And then everybody puts throttle down and just goes.
Because and this is why. This is the stuff that happens sort of secretly behind the scenes that we as business owners understand. It's like you're not making moves that you otherwise would have made. You're pulling back. You're laying off people. You're doing these things because of even the threat of it. And when the other side was in office talking about killing all this, like, we were all like, holy crap, now what? And now it's the same with tariffs. We're thinking, all right, what's the tariff thing going to be? It's this uncertainty that makes it difficult.
Well, and implementing one, then pulling back.
And what's the Supreme Court going to do?
The yo-yo piece of this is, and again, it hasn't affected me necessarily, but I think it probably has affected
tangentially.
Prices for food or what, just things I've had to buy. Mm-hmm. Directly with my business, no, but the extra stuff, yeah, probably so.
Probably a little bit, but it's nominal compared to if the tax thing didn't go
right
through. Yeah.
It's just another example of it.
Yeah.
And remember, when you're a big corporations, their job, their loyalty is to the company, which is basically the shareholders. When you have a small business, it's not about me. It's not about you. It's not about you. It's about the business surviving so it can continue to provide the services that your customers want and to provide an opportunity for your employees to thrive and be able to raise their families and do the things. It isn't about me. So when these tax changes come in, it has to be what's best for the company. What do we have to do to make sure the company survives? And if that means you have to fire people, you have to get rid of clients, it means you have to cut back. That's a very hard emotional toll to take on as you as an owner, me as an owner, you as an owner, because I'm in charge of people's lives now. And that's hard. It's one thing if you suck at what you do for a living, and you know they, some legislative thing wipes off your trade or service. But if government regulation and taxes creates something where you can't operate with your current headcount, and you have to fire somebody because you can't afford to keep them, it's a horrible position to be in, and that's what COVID did. It made business owners be in such a horrible position that the big companies didn't have to worry about. Government didn't have to worry about it. Small business got just throttled, and it's hard to recover from that.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, it's been about an hour. We usually do a good and bad. We'll skip that. Glenn, if somebody wants your services, I know that we got some deadlines coming up, too. We should probably at least talk about that.
Q3 estimates are due on Monday, technically Tuesday, because I think it's a holiday, perhaps. And then we've got for partnerships and corporations, and if you're paying estimates, it's third quarter's due next week. We're busy with the last few things because all these K-1s come in late for most of our clients, so we're working through all that.
So let me just say something to that. I don't give a crap about any of it because I'm on top of it because I work with you guys.
You're on it.
Right? I honestly could care less about any of these deadlines because it's just magically taken care of.
That's the greatest thing ever. So you'll get an email reminding you of things
first. I think we've already paid it.
There you go.
It's like it's already
done. I was going to say, I think I did too. I talked to David last week going, what do I own next couple weeks? Like, it's done.
It's already done. We do it monthly.
Stress-free.
Yeah, we do it monthly. All right. So Harper Plus Accounting, how do they reach you?
You can reach us at harpercpaplus.com. I call our office at 614-456-7222.
And catch your podcast.
Oh, yes, Empowering Entrepreneurs Podcast. It's always fun to see what's going on with that. Mm-hmm. We're if you call, we'll answer.
All right. Well, that is Harper Plus, our sponsor, our accountant, could be yours. We are Common Sense Ohio Show. And, of course, you can find us at commonsenseohioshow.com. As our other commentator today, I'm going to go back to this. We're going to get to you. I promise if you got your own comment, you got a topic you want us to cover, shoot it to us in at the website, anywhere else you see us or anywhere else there's a chance to do it. We will get to it. I promise. We are coming at you right from the middle each and every week. Till now.